I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. Sitting across from me this afternoon in the St. Teresa of Avila studio is Father Garrett Burns.
Hello, everybody.
And Father Drew Hoffman.
This is infuriating. Pick a name for this studio.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Animals. This is a professional atmosphere.
So I'm not sure if you listeners have noticed or not. Father Drew seems to be very concerned about this. Sometimes I think I'm clever and nobody notices, but actually that's most of the time. I think I'm clever and nobody notices. But if you are like Father Drew and infuriated, have noticed that the name keeps changing on the studios, it is because I like too many saints. I don't know what to call it. Like, I feel like the studio has to have a name and it should be named after a saint. But I like all the saints, so it's going to be a different saint every time because I just can't decide which one I like. I should also probably say that when I say studio, there should be air quotes in your mind around that. We're sitting on couches and chairs in a sitting room in the local seminary. This is not a high-tech operation.
We'll have live shows coming at you soon.
That really makes me nervous.
That would be fun. That's a good idea. Quo Vadis, we should do. This will come out after Quo Vadis, but at some event, we should do a live show like with some seminarians, and that'd be pretty boring. This summer at Friday Formation, we're doing a live show. It'd actually be really fun. Gail and I did a live show a few weeks ago in Manhattan. It was actually very fun with a live audience that spoke or laughed, and it was great.
How do you feel about that?
If Rick Rubin is here, I'll do a live show.
Start growing out my beard and hair right now. Get ready for the summertime. But as I was saying, so the name keeps changing because I like different saints. I've always been a big fan of the saints, and that's been with me since I was a kid. I don't know if that's typical for everyone, but I have always loved the saints. I remember as a small boy, like my first memory of kind of getting interested or learning about saints is I was a small kid, and my dad, you know, he did the dad thing. This is embarrassing. I'm going to cut this out. He laid down with me and talked with me. You know, I think every family has that. They have a different title.
Oh, that's
for
lovely.
Yeah, it was. It was precious moments, all right? Really? Don't look at me that way.
Wait, he gave you a precious moment?
Yeah, that's so beautiful.
Let's dig into this a little bit.
We called it snuggling, okay? That's what I was tiptoeing around. We called it snuggling, all right? Until I was 17 years old. No. Anyways... If my dad were still alive, he'd be pissed at me now.
Oh, that's a trump card that you have there, actually, that story.
I remember, so we'd have this time before I'd go to sleep. He'd lay down, talk with me about the day and things like that. And at some point in time, he gave me a book about saints. And then he made the rule that once a week, I was supposed to read a story about a saint and then tell him about it that night as I was getting ready for bed and we were falling asleep. And so I still remember to this day the very first saint that I picked out of the book to read, which is not surprised for any young boy, was Saint Francis of Assisi, because like most modern day Catholics, my friend thought he likes animals. I like animals. Mm-hmm. We've got a bond. Turns out there's a lot more that happened in Saint Francis' life. He's not beatified and canonized because of his love for animals. There were other things as well. He may have even loved the church more than he loved animals, but... You know, that's a theory.
Hot take.
That's right. But I remember reading about him and again, however old I was, 10 years old, being surprised that there was more to his life and more important things to his life than animals and being excited to tell my dad about Saint Francis. And so that's like really one of the first saints I remember learning about. And it stayed with me. When I was a seminarian, you know, I discerned with the Franciscans, you know, that idea of St. Francis. I shouldn't say I discerned with Francis. I was discerning the possibility of it. I went to see them. I didn't spend more than a week with them. But the idea of St. Francis hung out in my mind for a long time. And I still love him. I still admire him. There's many other St. Francis or many other saints in that list that I love. But St. Francis was one of the first ones I remember as a young boy learning about and just kind of being fascinated and inspired by his life. So I don't know if you guys have like a first saint that you really remember, this like a friend that entered into your life and he was there, so or she was there.
Yeah, I remember first just being, like you said, loving all the Saints. Like, I remember I had just a chain with medals on it, and I think there had to be 30 different medals on this one chain.
Catholic, we get it.
Yeah, one right. of those.
And yeah, I remember distinctly wearing it to a basketball practice, and some of the other guys like had like a gold chain or whatever. And I was like, yeah, this is like my kind of like hood chain, but it's like Catholic thing. So this is cool. And then I had to take it off for practice, and I got a black eye at that practice. So I was like blaming because I had to take this thing off. Anyway, so I just love
equals.
Right, right. I loved all of the Saints, but the first one that really maybe made a personal impact was, I think it was in eighth grade, and our religion teacher gave us the assignment to read one of the Lewis DeWall books.
Oh,
and,
nice.
Which Drew talked about in the last pod. And so I read St. Francis Xavier's. And so he was really the first one that, you know, it talked about he was an athlete and a good student in college and then became this missionary. And it just seemed so awesome and exciting. And so he became my confirmation saint and have had a great devotion to him ever since.
I get a lot of grief now because I preach about the Saints all the time. I love the Saints. And people will say, you have like 15 favorite Saints. You always say this person's your one of your favorite Saints and things like that. I love the Saints now. But I can't say that back in the day, I have all that many memories of the Saints. St. Elizabeth was my home parish, so I learned a lot about St. Elizabeth Van Seton. But really, I was trying to discern a confirmation saint when I was a sophomore in high school, and I didn't really know. I didn't have a lot of interaction with the Saints, I didn't think. And Ignatius of Loyola, so Francis Xavier's best friend, was in my history book, my secular history book. And I didn't remember there having been a saint in there yet. And I thought if he was strong and powerful and successful enough to make it into this history book, it's someone I want to learn more about. Mm. And I would certainly say Ignatius Loyola is my favorite saint now. I say I have a lot of favorite saints. Ignatius has always been number one. He always has been number one. Catherine and Gregory the Great and some others will come in after that. But Ignatius is number one. And that's such a random way that he was introduced into my life. Maybe a silly way, but he has become a friend. He helps me so much in discernment and decision-making and how to handle my emotions and then how to talk with college kids or with young people or with older, whatever the case might be. He's been a real spiritual friend to me.
Fun fact, do you know how St. Francis Xavier met St. Ignatius of Loyola?
Yeah, they were forced to be roommates.
I think St. Francis Xavier was roommates with St. Peter Fabian first, and Peter Fabian was already friends with Ignatius and introduced them.
And they moved him in. And Francis is mad and there's not enough room. It like helped him to save money. And Francis does not like Ignatius early on. He's annoyed. Ignatius is 38 when Francis is 22 when they're living together.
Oh, I didn't realize they were that big.
So it's like this creepy, I would talk with the college kids. I preached about it the other day. I talked about the college kids. Like the most common thing in the world, not liking your roommate, is how Ignatius and Francis became.
That's excellent.
And Peter Fabre, who becomes the guy who nobody ever talks about, was the only adult in the situation. Francis doesn't like Ignatius. Ignatius, by his own admittance, comes on way too strong, and he knows that. Peter is the calm one. He's the one we always forget about. He's the one who introduces Francis, calm down. Ignatius, hey, okay. But they were just college roommate bros that lived together.
So is that you, me, and Zach Capehart, who we mentioned in the previous?
Capehart is Peter Favre in this situation.
That's my dream project someday on the side is I want to write a book about the friendships of saints. I think this is a podcast for the future too, how important friendships are in shaping us and in supporting us. And if you look at most of the saints, a lot of them have friends that are also saints. And that's not a coincidence.
Saints run in packs is an old saying.
Absolutely. Yeah, I could name a number of favorite saints. Maybe that'd be a fun one in future too, you know, confirmation saints. All of us are Knights of the Holy Queen, which is a group where you take on another saint name. We could talk about those saints. So St. Francis of Assisi was my very first one. The second big one that I remember entering into, and this was in high school, and my high school chaplain went to a Catholic high school. My high school chaplain gave me a book on his life, and again, it just set my heart on fire with St. John Bosco. Just another stud. You know, again, athlete, grew up on the farm like I did and just tremendous, brilliant, hardworking, just stud of a man. And so that was another one. I looked at Salesians for a while when I was discerning. Like, I love St. John Bosco. Maybe I'll like Salesians. It doesn't quite work that way, turns out. Very happy in the diocesan priesthood. The Lord knew where I needed to be. But yeah, St. John Bosco was a hugely influential part. In fact, I would have probably taken him for my Knight of the Holy Queen name, but someone had already taken him. I don't really remember who.
That would be a good topic, our knights' names, because all of our knights' names are not our favorite saints.
And right, so. Yeah. In fact, I don't even like my... No. Now, one of the downsides, though, so we all love the saints, love reading about them, and they are a great way to inspire. You know, one of the books I give out to guys at Discerning is the book on St. John Paul II's The Five Great Loves, because if you can read that and not feel any inkling towards the priesthood, you probably don't have a vocation, because it's just so good and so inspiring. And so those are great tools when discerning to read about the saints and to look at that and see what it awakens in your heart. But the flip side of that coin that sometimes we can get in trouble with is we read about them and we feel like, well, I'm not like that guy. If this is what holiness looks like, I just must be faking it. And so we can read about those and we get in this idea that, well, I'm not a good Catholic, or guys that are discerning will get into the idea, I'm not holy enough to be a priest. And so that's an idea that sometimes crops up and can even be instigated by knowing or reading a lot about the saints. Not holy enough.
Jason Everett mentions that at the end of the book.
Oh, does he really?
He's at the end of the book.
I don't remember that.
This cannot be the takeaway from this book. Please don't let it be the takeaway.
And
I met him and I told him, I said, that hit me hard. That was so helpful for you to mention right that at on. The end of the book, because that was my takeaway at the end of the book. I'm so far away from John Paul II. Why am I even reading this? I'm never going to be that holy. What's the point?
You'll also probably never be Pope.
That is still up in the air. That's still up in the air. Although the thing that I wanted to do if I became Pope was not have the sign of peace. And most places don't have the sign of peace anymore because of the pandemic. And so my mission is done. But a terrible thing that brought it about. I don't feel really great about it.
Well done. Good way to full servant.
Way to ruin it for everyone.
Yeah, sorry.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Yeah. Stupid pandemic.
I have a friend, side note, that he likes to tell me how he's going to be the Pope someday. And he knows that I like to work. I like to be busy about things. And so being a good friend, he likes to try and annoy me. So he tells me when he's Pope, he's going to bring me to the Vatican. My one job will be to read him morning prayer in the morning while he lays in his recliner. I won't be allowed to do anything else other than read him morning prayer.
Your papal obedience.
If he ever becomes Pope, he will not be known as Saint the Great or whatever. I'm going to put that out there, and I can do that because I know he will never listen to this, because he's one of those friends that does not support me in anything I do.
Friends are needed in our journey to holiness. All kinds of different friends.
But so yeah, this idea of reading about the saints can fill us with this idea that, well, I'm not holy enough. That's one of the things I love reading about modern day saints. The history of the saints and their life, it's called hagiography. And sometimes when a saint is really old, that hagiography can gloss over all of their faults that they all had as humans. And they can only tell these miracle stories. And you know, you get that with the Saint Francis's. You get that with some of the older saints, that we only hear the wonderful things about. But then you read about like Blessed Stanley Rother. You read about Father Capon. And you see some of the warts that are, you know, it doesn't mean they weren't holy. It means that they were human. And for me, that's always been really assuring.
Blessed Stanley Rother's sister works at the Lord's Diner a lot. She was a religious sister here in town. And when you would ask her about Stanley Rother, a blessed of the church, she would basically be like, I mean, he's fine. I don't know what you want me to say. My brother, he was as annoying as every other brother. And that's actually a really helpful thing to have as part. That living tradition is great.
It says what the saints are for, to give us hope, to spur us on. They never want to put us down to say, this is how holy and awesome we are. You could never get on our level. You know, they're there literally by their intercession. They do give us that strength and that push we need.
That's a great point. I've never thought about that way, that like the saints themselves don't want to discourage us. So if that's our takeaway, we're actually annoying them, offending them. I don't know what would be the term.
Disservice them.
They don't want that for us. They want to encourage us where we're at. I used to give a presentation called The Fault in Our Saints. And it was a whole hour-long presentation just about the faults of saints. I'm like, I'm not trying to take anything away from these saints. I just want you to know they had their problems. Yeah. They had their faults. So let's be realistic with it. They did these wonderful things, but they struggled with things too. And just like you and me. So the idea wasn't to take away from the saints, but say, yeah, all right, what does holiness look like? That's the challenging question. Well, I'm not holy enough to be priest. what is holy enough? What I mean, what does that even look like? Or what can a person mean? What do you mean when you say I'm not holy enough? What is holy enough?
And that's why I think it's a good place to start. Again, if someone, a guy came to me and said that is I'm not holy enough to be a priest, I would say good. You're right. Not. I mean, but no one is holy enough to be in persona Christi. And so, but that's a great place to start. Humility is kind of that first step. It's a foundational virtue. And I remember that being a bigger temptation for me. I read in a book somewhere of there's nothing worse than a prideful priest. Mm. And so thinking I just didn't want to become that. And we all have pride in us, obviously. But
well, I don't.
Yes. He's
I got rid
the
of
perfect
that.
One over there that we can never get on his level.
And don't you forget it.
But that's actually a good, great. If you feel like you're not holy enough, that's a great place to mm-hmm. start. That means you have this sense of humility and neediness for grace. That is really the only way you're going to quote unquote achieve holiness. That's what the saints did. They knew their need for a reliance on God and his grace.
Archbishop Carlson, the former Archbishop of St. Louis, loved telling a story about a guy who very piously came up to him. He was like, Archbishop, I just don't think I'm worthy to be a priest. And Archbishop said, oh, let me save you some time. You're not. And you think you're saying a pious thing, but you're not. You're saying a truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that word enough is always a spiritual word. Whenever you say the word enough, pray about that word. Pray about what's going on there. Because the Lord works in specifics and the evil one works in generalities.
Huh.
So when I'm saying, and this can happen, I need to pray more. That might not be the Lord. If you're saying to yourself, I need to pray more, that might not be the Lord. Hey, I need to pray 20 minutes. I need to give 20 more minutes. I need to make more focus on my Lectio or spiritual reading. That's the Lord. And maybe the Lord is moving us from that initial experience of pray more to specifics, but it never sits in enough. Is this enough? That's not the Lord. The evil one can do that though. Mm-hmm. The evil one loves to do that. You're not praying enough. So that's always a good area to pray through. When I say I'm not holy enough, what are some specific ways that that could be rectified? And if there aren't, if that isn't coming up in prayer, that's not the Lord speaking to you. That's not the good shepherd speaking to you. That's not the good spirit talking there.
St. Francis Xavier actually brings that up in Introduction of Devout Life in the context of confession. I hadn't thought of it quite like you presented it there, Drew, but he talks about don't go to confession, say, I'm not praying enough or I need to pray more. He says, that's useless. That doesn't help your confessor. That doesn't really help you. He says, you need to be specific. I need to be saying more of my rosary or I need to be doing Lectio Divina for 10 minutes a day or this is the goal I've set for myself and I did not achieve it. But Francis Xavier in Introduction to Devout Life says, don't do that in confession. And so that whole idea that the evil one is speaking in generalities and that anytime that word enough shows up in your prayer, that should be a flag. I need to pray about this. That's great advice. I hadn't thought about that. I think too, if when a person gets to the point where like, well, I think I am getting holy enough, whatever that may be for it. As you were talking about, Drew, that's actually a very dangerous place to be in. You may have this idea, well, I need to be holy enough to do that. No, if you actually think you're in holy enough, you are in the danger zone at that point. Because anyone that stands before the majesty of God, the glory of the Eucharist and the Mass and says, yeah, I'm worthy of that, either doesn't understand what the Eucharist is or is not seeing themselves truly. You know, if you get into that point, you're doing God a favor. If, well, I'm holy enough, so I'm going to be a priest. Well, yeah, because I'm doing
back, God.
Yeah, I'll take care of this, Lord. I appreciate what you've done for me. Let me do something for you.
Some lightweight over here.
That's right. Cross a little heavy for you, Lord. I got this. Gotcha. That's not a good place to be in. Not a good place for yourself or for anyone around you. Some of the very damaging things in the spiritual world are those who are so convinced of their own righteousness and goodness and that they are going to set other people right. Those are the ones that wreak havoc in the spiritual ministry and the realm of that. So this idea of holy enough, if that thought comes up, that should immediately cue in on prayer. And that's more likely the evil one whispering than God.
There's an old saying, William Law, there's no greater sign of confirmed pride. There's no surer sign of confirmed pride than believing you are holy enough. So on either side, when enough comes up, sit with that red flag, red flag, red flag.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be a legitimate maybe concern. but not a fear that paralyzes. Again, when that fear is there, it's coming from the evil one. Can it be a concern? Do we need to strive for holiness as priests? Absolutely.
Yep.
But I think when, if you're able to spend more time with seminarians or more time with priests, I know we talked about that, Drew, in our time in seminary, just that being an initial pull into seminary and attraction to priesthood of just spending time with priests. One, you see they're not holy enough or they're not perfect.
Yeah.
And so that becomes more real. And it's a concern that I want to strive for holiness and I'm not as holy as I want to be right now, but I could get there and I see that other priests, other seminarians are not perfect either. And so it becomes more, it's just more realistic. It's a reality.
It's a great just thing to pray through. Again, anytime that enough comes up, red flag doesn't mean it's bad. I need to pray with that. I need to think a little bit more. What's the Lord trying to teach me here? What are some experiences like hanging out with Sems that I need to have here? Like if it stays there, bad. But it can all, if it's transitory, moving towards something, then that's the Lord and it can be really, really, really a helpful thing.
Mm-hmm. I was talking with a seminarian just earlier today and he's going through a little bit of a rough patch as we all do one time. And one of the beautiful things he was sharing is that I am still learning that the Lord loves me where I am at and not where I think I should be. Because a lot of people operate under this false identity of that love is a reward for good behavior. And so when I am at where I think I should be at, whatever that is, then the Lord will love me. Then he will respond. Then he will pour graces on me. And that is not the God we pray to. That is not the God of Catholicism. That is not Jesus Christ. He loves us where I'm at, and then he walks with us where he thinks we should go, which is not always the same place where we think we should be at. And so he loves us where we are at, not where we think we should be at. And he's going to make that journey with us. And on the other side of that, we as humans are rarely good judges of where we are objectively at in our quote unquote holiness. You know, I can't tell you how many good people, oh, Father, I'm doing such terrible. No, you're actually a really, you're striving for holiness. You're not there yet. And you're not going to be this side of heaven, but you're not seeing yourself clearly either. And that's where, as we talked in another podcast, some of the, my spiritual paternity comes in to say, hey, let me tell you some of the good things I do see. Let me say, help you to see some of your own goodness, some of your own holiness, some of your own efforts and how that's pleasing to God. And so my paternal aspect steps into that moment.
So Chad, the question that comes up with me is enough. There are some benchmarks that a young man should be arriving at. There is, it's not just, hey, you're fine. What are some of the benchmarks for a young man discerning joining seminary? What are some of those? Where should he be spiritually? Questions you'd ask, things you'd want to weigh.
Absolutely. So the minimum is Sunday Mass. If you're not going to Mass on Sundays at this point, now is not the time to be thinking about seminary. You've got to get that foundational piece open. So Sunday Mass, regular confession. So at least about once a month or once every 6 weeks or more often. So Sunday Mass, confession. Ideally, beyond that, I would want to be seeing them at least trying to get to Mass at one more time than Sunday. You know, depending on where they go to school, what their schedule is, there's some give and play. You know, some of our guys that live in rural dioceses going to public schools, you know, there may not be an option to go to a daily Mass. But if you're in the metro area, you can probably make more than Sunday Mass. So seeking the Lord in the Eucharist more than that, and that they are doing some sort of prayer on their own. So more than just, okay, well, I try and say a Hail Mary before I go to bed. That's good. I'm not downplaying that. And what I would be hoping is they're doing something to seek a relationship. So, well, I have a holy hour. Or, you know, I stop in for 10 minutes on my way home from school once a week. That's enough. Or I turn the radio off and I pray the rosary as I'm driving. Somewhere in that week, there should be some sort of prayer, which is a sign of them making the effort to step towards the Lord, to enter into that relationship, to open their hearts to God. Now, whether they're hearing God speak to that, that's another question or not. That's what I think a lot of guys want to evaluate it is, I'm not holy enough because I'm not hearing the Lord speak. Well, are you making efforts towards the Lord? So Sunday Mass, regular confession, and then some sort of relational directive prayer in there. Those are kind of the benchmarks I'm looking for at least initial. Some guys have more than that, and that's great. But that's where we want to at least be to start with. And I would add to that a desire for prayer. a real desire. Like, I do want to pray more. I don't quite know how to do it. And I don't know how to prioritize that yet in my schedule, but I desired and I'm making efforts for it. So those would be, I think, the benchmarks I generally look for.
That's helpful. That's really helpful just to give some, because enough could move me into, yeah, I'm not praying enough because I'm not going to Mass every Sunday. Well, that is a truth. That's true. I could get to Mass at 6 o'clock at St. Paul's on Mondays and Wednesdays, or 11:45 Monday through Friday during the week. Those are helpful things that maybe challenge us a little bit. Some of that challenge is good and not the evil one at all.
And just to couch it within desire, again, that's what, I mean, Augustine says, like, prayer is. So a lot of times, maybe I think a guy would say, I'm not holy enough, and think it's because I don't pray 2 holy hours a day, or I'm not like saying enough rosaries or something like that. I was like, that's not the benchmark of holiness, is the number of prayers. That's pharisaical, right? Mm-hmm. But if there's this deep desire and you act on that, to where you make some free choices of, I have free time and I'm going to go spend 10 minutes in prayer, right, or whatever, that shows a real, at least, desire for holiness. And then holiness is God's grace filling you up. And so that's why I think it's actually a great place to start, is to say, I'm not holy enough. It recognizes that. It's one of my favorite questions to ask marriage prep couples is, you know, I try to explain to them this reality of sacramental grace they'll receive, and say, how have you seen in your life as individuals and as a couple grace at work? You know, it can be such this nebulous thing of, oh yeah, God's help or God's grace. Like, you have to be able to have touched it in your past to know, like, this is, God is going to provide for me in the future. And so similarly for a guy discerning of a vocation, how have you seen your neediness and God fill that with his grace? That's what it means to be a holy seminarian, a holy priest, is to know my reliance and for God to provide that.
Yeah, that's excellent. And as you were saying, the desire followed by choice. It doesn't have to be saving the world choice, but that there is some action, that there's a desire on your heart and that you are responding to it in some way. That's a place to start. That's a place to start. It's also a place, I think, where we can leave it for today. It's a nice segue.
You're getting good at this, man.
Well, you know, when my podcasting career takes off, I'll still send you guys a Christmas
card.
Remember
us.
We'll call that a day here. So thanks again for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to answer, go ahead and email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. Keep praying, listening for that desire for the Lord, and choosing to respond to him. And we will see you next week.